I don't often start my show that way, but the sound you're listening to is that of a bird called a purple martin. Now, a lot of you are probably familiar with purple martins. They're the largest member of the swallow family in North America. The problem is that, like a lot of other songbirds, they've been disappearing in the past few decades. And one of the people who's keeping tabs on that is a woman named Sue Reinhard, who's a filmmaker. And she is putting together a documentary called The Messenger. I got a chance to see it just last night, and I'm happy to welcome Sue Reinhard onto the program today. Sue, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm just fine. And let me just start by saying how terrific I think your film is.
Oh, thank you.
Your documentary. I'm not a birder, okay? Even though I have been covering topics like this on my show, 17 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
I never really got into the whole birding thing. And I know a lot of people who are birders, and I'm beginning to see why they might do that. Now, your documentary, which is still in production, because you dragged yourself out of a studio just now to talk to me, didn't you?
Yes, we're doing our mix. That's a big getting close to the end final stage for all the sound.
Yeah, mixes, yeah, they're important. I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck on it, and congratulations on what you have so far. So what I saw was the documentary in progress. Some people might call it a rough cut. I don't know. What do you call it?
Well, what you saw was actually what we call picture lock, which means we've finished the editing, and we're actually been working on the sound editing now. And actually, today we're doing the mix, so we've been moving it along. But you saw the completed picture, so the story is there.
And it's just terrific, and it's also disturbing. And I hardly know where to start. The photography is wonderful, and one of the things you do, and you do it over and over again, so you must be really proud of it, is showing the birds in flight, the songbirds in flight in slow-mo. I assume that's all your footage.
Yes, and that was really one of the big challenges when we started to make this film. Songbirds are small birds. They're the ones we hear. And in fact, we hear them more than we see them. And so the challenge was, you know, also they, well, not only are they hard to see in the day, but they, when they migrate, which is, you know, the big movement of birds that happens twice a year, they migrate at night. So as a filmmaker, it's like, okay, I really think this is an interesting story I want to tell, but how are we going to see it? You know, it's very, these birds are difficult to film. So we came up with this idea to try and film them in flight, but it's a very complicated process. So interrupt me if I go on too long, but basically we, at the University of Western Ontario, they have what's called a wind tunnel. And they have this center for studying birds, and they do these scientific studies there where they measure, you know, how long a bird takes to burn off X amount of fuel and stuff. So we knew they had this device, and it's like basically it's a tunnel, but it's the size of a room that birds can fly in, and they can fly for hours and hours and hours. So it's glass, so we approached them to try and film it. So the whole process of getting those shots was actually 3 years.
Yikes!
Yes, because we approached them first in 2011, and we did a test shoot to see, first of all, proof of concept. Would my idea work? Could we capture this image? Because they're flying in a, you know, this emulated wind tunnel, but they're also flying in night because they like to fly at night. So let me
ask you there. Did they turn off the lights at night?
Yes, it was very black, except for we had very, very small amount of lighting. And that made it almost impossible to film because the birds are moving in real time, but the depth of field was very, very shallow. So it was extremely difficult. But we did a test shoot, and it worked on two counts. One, the scientists were confident that we were professional and, you know, interested, and the other was that we actually had an image. So then the next year, we have to apply to permits because you can't have a wild creature in captivity or in a thing like that with having it all insured, you know, all these government permits that the animal will be treated properly. So we had to go through that process, and then they were actually wild birds, so they had to be captured and housed And then they had to be habituated to fly in the tunnel, and then we came back and filmed. So the whole process was a couple of years, and it worked out really well, and all the birds were happily released at the end, and they continued flying away and into the real world. And we have some spectacular images that I think, you know, they're pretty unique. I've never seen them anywhere myself.
Well, they're songbirds, and I don't think I've ever seen songbirds filmed that way in slow-mo. And one of the things, I was sitting there trying to figure out how you did it. I guess that's me. Maybe other people would. Maybe other people would just accept it and roll with it. I was looking at it going, okay, they didn't need to have them in focus for too long because it's in super slow motion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if a bird flies into frame and you get, you know, 3 seconds, bam, that's probably a lot more than you need.
Yeah, that was exactly the process.
Oh.
Yeah. And we used a special camera called the Phantom, which was filming at about 800 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we did it.
Well, thank goodness you did, because it's just a wonderful punctuation to this documentary. Now, the point of it is that we are losing songbirds. This is not a good thing, obviously. And I have covered issues like this. I've looked at the decline of other species. We know that our what we call, oh, now I'm not going to be able to think of it. What is the charismatic megafauna?
Oh, my God, I never would have thought of that.
You've never heard of that phrase?
No.
Okay, the charismatic megafauna usually get all the attention. And so we're talking black rhinoceroses, tigers, and to some degree, monarch butterfly could be considered a charismatic megafauna simply because it's iconic.
Mm-hmm.
These species of birds, a lot of them, not so much. I mean, purple martin, we started with purple martin. That's a bird that a lot of people know of, but could they recognize the call? Would they even recognize it flying by? How you describe it in the film, the purple martin, as for its tendency to swoop and devour insects.
Yeah, they're aerial insectivores, which means they eat insects on the wing. So they do these extraordinary maneuvers. They're extremely beautiful flyers. They live near water, and they fly over water, and they catch insects, and they're really beautiful to watch. They're kind of iridescent. They call them purple, but they look black, but when they hit the light, it's kind of like this beautiful iridescent purpley black. Very beautiful birds.
So to get back to my point, here we have all these various species that are in decline. The birds happen to be one of them. Insects. If you read Doug Tallamy's book, he's concerned about loss of insect biomass, and that's got to be leading to bird decline as well. You look at a lot of different factors in there, including agriculture, habitat loss, fossil fuel extraction. What else? What am I missing there?
Well, there's a myriad of causes, and that's why looking at the reasons why birds are in decline is so difficult, because there's no smoking gun. There's no one reason why we're losing our birds. And it's happening all over the world. So we, in the film, we kind of take the viewers on a journey. And we kind of move through various landscapes, and we meet various people along the way. And all these people, some of them are scientists, some of them are what you might call a citizen scientist. They're all kind of working to discover the problem. And some of them, you know, they're working for change, and they're working to help birds. So anyway, there's many causes, and some of the ones that we look at in the film, just to kind of do a brief overview, I mean, we look at that birds collide with buildings and structures.
That's a huge one, and cats.
Birds get eaten by cats, yes. And we actually, what I tried to make is a modern film. I think people think of nature films, they think of something, you know, these little birds in a tree far away, but we really grounded some of these stories in cities, in suburbs, you know, where these things take place.
New York City. I was amazed when you went to Ground Zero, where they had the lights shining up into the New York sky, mm-hmm. and looking at the reaction of the birds, and the birds gathered around the light, and they get closer and closer and closer until at one point you have to call it off, say, shut down the lights, because we're going to have a tragedy here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very dramatic scene, actually.
It is. It's terribly dramatic, and it made me wonder, well, was there somebody there every night to make sure the birds didn't come crashing to the ground?
Well, the tribute in light, which is the big light shining into the sky, is an annual tribute to the victims of 9/11. So it's only on for two nights a year. And it's done by the Municipal Art Society, and it was done as a sculpture. But what they didn't realize was that by shining these enormous lights up into the sky at that time of year in September, they're interrupting a huge migration pattern of birds. So what happens is the light is so strong, you know, they have all these ways that they figure out how to get where they're going, and some of them are through the celestial bodies, the moon and the stars. But these lights are so much brighter than the moon and the stars, they're like, okay, I'm going this way, and then they're like, oh, I'm not, I'm going that way, you know, and they get drawn into them. And then once they're in them, they're really confused because it's like, whoa, did I just land on the moon or what's going on?
Yeah.
And they can circle until they die of exhaustion or they collide and stuff. So it's very dangerous. But so what happened was the Audubon Society in New York started to work with the people because they wanted the sculpture. They wanted the memorial. But so they teamed up. And the Audubon's there and they monitor it. And if it becomes dangerous, they'll shut it down. They'll let the birds fly away.
And they do that now every year?
Yes, they do it every year.
Unbelievable.
Yes,
I mean, and it's
amazing.
The law of unintended consequences. Here
yes.
we think, we really, well, it's because humans think like humans. And all we're interested in our art and our spectacular sculptures and our spectacular ventures. And we don't understand how we affect other species.
Yes.
And often we find out too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed also at when we, you went to the boreal forests, which rings the northern hemisphere of the planet Earth.
Yes.
And you show how it's being carved up and how that can affect the migration and the communication, the nesting patterns, all kinds of things for these birds. But what really fascinated me, because I'm an audio guy, this is an audio podcast, was the idea that the noise from this machinery, which is pumping oil or pumping whatever gas or whatever you have you there in these little isolated areas, can mask the bird calls. So yes. It's harder for them to mate.
Yes. So songbirds sing, as we hear, but they're not singing for fun. They're singing to attract a mate or to defend their territory. So their communication has meaning. And in the boreal forest, there's a lot of energy infrastructure. And one of the things they have is these kind of small, kind of innocuous-looking little sheds that are there to pressurize the pipelines, which are underground, to keep all this movement of, you know, whatever it is under there. There's natural gas, there's oil, there's whatever.
There's tar sands.
Yes.
Come on. This is your famous export from Canada.
Yes. So to keep the export moving, they have these little pump stations, and they're kind of dotted throughout the forest, but they make a lot of noise, an incredible amount of noise. But, you know, this is not a populated area, so people haven't complained because they don't live next to the pump station, but the birds do. And what they've actually done is studied that the birds that try and live in that area actually have less pairing success, which means they cannot find a mate. So it's like trying to go to a noisy bar every night and never getting a date.
No wonder I don't go to noisy bars anymore.
Yes, it would be very difficult. So it actually is lowering, it's not killing the birds, but it's lowering their, you know, what they call, the scientists call, reproductive success. So it's lowering their ability to mate, which therefore lowers the numbers.
Right.
So it's another way, you know, like they might hit a bird building in New York, but in the north, they just may have less of them being born or less of them successfully reproducing. So there's so many different ways they decline too.
All right, let's play another bird call here. And for folks listening in, I wish I could say, give me a phone call and we'll give you a prize if you can identify it. And I'm not even going to make you identify it. By the way, Sue Reinhard, who is the director of the documentary The Messenger, and I need to mention that. Let's mention also the website right now. Songbirdsos.com is one place where people can go. What else would you suggest for them? Because you've got an Indiegogo thing going on right now.
Yes, and you can go to themessenger.com as well. So it's just the messenger doc, as in documentary, and then com. And also we have a link through to that to Indiegogo. And we are in the final stages, literally the home stretch, the last 6 days of an Indiegogo campaign. And that's just for the final bit of money we need to complete the film. And we've got a whole story there on what we have to do. One, the sound mix we mentioned earlier, which I'm doing today. So all these final stages of post-production. And then we're also looking for a little bit of money to help kind of kickstart an outreach and social impact campaign, because we want to tour the film. We want to bring it to people who want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to just get that ball rolling, because that's a whole, once the film is done, that's a whole new initiative.
Well, I'm hoping I can help you get it to Chicago. I think people here need to see it. All right, let's play Name That Bird. Do you know which one this is, Sue?
Rusty Blackbird?
No. The answer is Baltimore Oriole. We were looking for Baltimore Oriole. you've had to do with a lot of birds here. Let's play here. Let's listen to this for a second. Very interesting, but Baltimore Oriole is one of those birds that's disappearing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful backyard bird, and it's declined about 46% since 1966. I should have recognized that song. My ears must be numb from being in the mix all day.
You know what? You've probably dealt with so many birds because you go... No, it's true. You go all over the planet
to do this. We do go all over the planet, but I'll also digress for 1 minute and confess I'm not really a birder. And you said, you know, your birder friends are interested in birders. So I have two things to say to that. One, when I started this film, I simply started because when we have a summer cottage, and there are birds that I hear there, and I'm not a birder, but there's sounds I love, like the white-throated sparrow. It's just like, to me, it's the soundtrack of summer, right? And they have a bird feeder. So it's just, you know, we have a bird book. We have a pair of binoculars. So it's just, I wouldn't call myself, you know, a birder, but I just have a little bit of knowledge. But what happened for me was that in my lifetime, because we've got, it's a family place and it's very humble and we've gone there for years, I noticed that birds I used to see were no longer around. So birds I saw as a child, you know, I'd say, well, what happened to the rosy-breasted grosbeak, or what happened to the, you know, the whippoorwill? They're just gone. Barn swallows. We used to have them nesting near our boathouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was just me. I wasn't getting up there enough, or you kind of, your brain rationalizes it and thinks, oh, we did something, you know, something's different. Yeah, then I discovered through research and actually read a book, Bridget Stutchbury, The Silence of the Songbirds, that it's not me, it's the birds are going.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Bridget, we actually have half the birds that we did in the 1960s.
Half. I think we need to let that sink in for folks. We have half of the songbirds we had 4 decades ago.
Absolutely. The decline is faster than any other time in human history.
And that doesn't surprise me. And one of the things you mention in there, and it's a cliche, I know, the canary in the coal mine. But it is true. Birds are sensitive, and they do... they don't fare as well when things start to go south, no pun intended. And this is one way to measure the health of our planet and our ecosystems is by looking at our bird populations.
You're absolutely right. They are what's called an indicator species. And we have always, even before we had that term, we've always looked to birds as humans. We've looked to them, you know, in the Roman times. And we look to them to, you know, herald the change of season and the coming of storms. And farmers look to them for weather. And, you know, they've always told us something. And now they're telling us, you know, that if they can't survive, I mean, perhaps we can't survive as well. So it's a very serious message. I mean, the environment, they're warning us of that, you know, we've changed the environment faster than they can cope with. So we're losing them, but we rely on the same environment. We all rely on a healthy, functioning planet to survive. So that's ultimately, you know, the message that the birds are telling us, right?
Yeah. And you do this in such an elegant way. Let me play that the other bird. This is the one you thought it was, and this is a bird that has declined by 93%. Now it's obviously more than one. And that's the rusty blackbird. Now, I'm not familiar with the rusty blackbird.
It's not a bird that we would see normally. It lives in the forests. And I don't even know why that particular bird is in decline. There might be an expert out there who knows. Maybe somebody can call in. But there's many. The scientists are still really struggling for each. I mean, I always say each bird, each species has a different story to tell. Like, again, there's no one reason. And everyone faces a different set of challenges. It's very hard to know why some have such steep declines and some have less, but we're working on it.
The name of the film is called The Messenger. A couple more things before I let you go. One of the thing that always thrilled me in watching your film, and I don't know if you realize just how powerful it is. There's a lot of scientists in this film, and unlike bird watchers watch. They get out their binoculars, they get out their telescopes, and they're tracking birds, and they might get out their cameras and so forth. But the scientists collect them and sometimes tag them. They weigh them, they measure them so they can get data to understand how well the birds are doing. So they have to capture them in these nets, and you see this several times in the film where they're in the nets, and then they let them go. Mm-hmm. And every time a bird is let go in this film, my heart exploded.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
And I think I'm not sure you understand how powerful that is for people to see.
Well, that's great to hear.
And I think folks will react to that, especially because, as you mentioned earlier, and we need to touch on this just really briefly, is how many birds are killed by skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible, and I know about this because I talked about this on my show last year. Even in Chicago, there is an effort to get the buildings to turn their lights off. It's Lights Out Chicago, and I know there are lights out programs in other cities. In Chicago, there's actually an organization called the Chicago Bird Collision Monitors. Mm-hmm. And you show something like that in your documentary where people just, they go to the base of buildings every day and collect dead birds, and it's just so sad.
Yeah, in Toronto we filmed with a group called the Fatal Light Awareness Program, and they've done this collection of birds that you have, you just mentioned, and they've done it for 20 years. So it's kind of amazing. They do these patrols, and they document the dead birds they find, and then they rehabilitate the living. So if anything, any little bird is injured, they'll take it to a wildlife center, or if it's just stunned, they'll grab it before it gets, you know, eaten by another animal or stepped on, and then they'll release it in a park or a nearby place. So they do really amazing work. And even in Toronto, that group, because they documented these birds for so long, they are actually able to use the birds as evidence in a court case, which was launched by EcoJustice, to kind of force building owners to take responsibility for bird deaths. And so now we have a new law in Canada that if you are knowingly killing birds by light emitting off your building in a certain way, you're breaking the law. So now building owners have to take measures to rectify that. So even though you say it's sad, I think that there's a lot of things in the film that really show progress and change and people who are working to make the situation better.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's kind of where you have to go, because if you looked at all the negative, nobody would ever get out of their chair again.
Also, I mean, I think with this film, I mean, you've said wonderful things about it, which is great, but we really, really, really worked hard to make a film it's not just talk. I mean, it really is an experience. The birds go on an epic journey. We follow the movement of birds all over the planet.
Ooh, that's some of the coolest stuff. You've got these maps.
Yeah. It's a fantastic soundtrack. It's a really great piece of cinema. So if you want to watch a movie, and be engaged and be moved. It's an emotional journey, and it's a filmic experience. So it wasn't just about getting the story out. It was about finding a way to tell the story that lots of people will want to see this film, and they'll really enjoy this film, and they'll tell other people about this film. And that's great. And that's what we're aiming for, because I'll just add one other last thing in here that's quite important. I think that the thing, you know, we talked about birds being an indicator species and how they're telling us that there's something wrong with the planet. But the other part of it is that we actually need birds. And we do ask the question in the film, that could we live without them? And they do work that we need done. I mean, they really do have jobs in the ecosystem. They eat a lot of insects. They spread seeds around. Some of them are even pollinators. So we actually need them. So there's reasons to be concerned, and there's reasons to be concerned. You know, birders might be concerned because there's less birds to watch, but everybody should be concerned because it's something that affects us all.
I think that's a good way to wrap it up. I was going to go back to the maps because I'm a map guy and I love the maps. And then when they tag the birds, you chart them across continents and you know, flying in circles and flying straight and coming back. And it's just amazing. You've got to see this. Go to songbirdsos.com or themessengerdoc.com.
Yes, and you can find us on Indiegogo, mm-hmm. and just under film and The Messenger.
What's the final day?
It's midnight next Tuesday.
Midnight what date?
Tuesday the 6th?
7th. Tuesday is the 7th.
Tuesday the 7th.
All right, Tuesday, April 7th. No, I understand, and I'm sorry about that, because the wonderful world of podcasting means that you got to be really date specific.
Okay.
If you want to support this via Indiegogo, they're getting really close to the goal. I would advise you to do it. You can see the film trailer there, and you'll get to see Sue Reinhard, who really doesn't want to be on camera. But that's okay. And let's go out with another songbird, since you went through the trouble of getting it. And I assume your wonderful audio staff collected these recordings.
Yeah, many of them, yes.
And this is the bobolink. And while we have a break in the bobolink, Sue Reinhard, thank you so much, and good luck with the... And one more thing, while the bobolink is singing here, you're going to be premiering this at a very special event, right?
Yes, and yes, it's great that you mentioned it, although don't remind me, we have so much work to do to get there. But yeah, we're having our world premiere at the prestigious Hot Docs Film Festival, which is here in Toronto. It's actually North America's biggest documentary film festival. So it'll be on the big screen in a big theater, hopefully with lots of people, and I'm looking forward to that, end of the month.
And the bobolink says... Well, the bobolink likes that idea. Sue, I hope we talk soon.
Okay, thanks very much.